Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of his podcast, Edification and Wellbeing. This is your host and personal physical educator, Juan Baez. And today, in this episode, I am talking with Marisa and Bambi from the Age Proof Project, and they're based in California. And we're talking about, well, we talk about many things, but in general, I think we're talking about practical or functional aging, right? And the importance of the integration of sensorial exercises and functional neuroanatomy, and practical exercises for a better living. Now, we go over what aging is, I think, in overall, but I'm always asking myself, like, what is it, right? There's always that difference. For some people, aging is, well, getting older. For some people, that getting older means, being irrelevant, getting weaker, getting sick, and things like that. And for some people, it means getting better, right? As I say often, just like with the wine, right? I'm just like the wine or like a good whiskey. You know, the older I am, the better. I am more relevant. I have much more knowledge, more insight about life, etc. For some people, aging is just a biological thing. For some people, it's something very scary. We go over all about it. But it is definitely a topic that I will be exploring a little more in depth, perhaps if I find someone, or you know someone, and you can recommend someone who is either a professional gerontologist, for example, or a neurologist who deals with aging, or someone who works with older population, and when it comes to health and to well-being in general, or even learning, it will be very interesting to speak to them. So I'll keep finding. I just moved from where I was living in Haines City, Florida, to Winter Park. So now I'm a lot closer to things. I'm closer to University of Central Florida, which gives me somewhat, I would say, better access to the departments and, you know, knock doors and contact people and see who wants to talk to me. I already contacted a professor. I'm not going to say names, but a professor who works with the neurology of music and its effects on people with mental disorders or brain disorders. And I already talked to someone else, another personal trainer from the area who works with, you know, biomechanics and practical fitness and functional fitness. And, you know, he agreed. That would be, in fact, the first, at least in the history of his podcast, the first ever interview or chat that I have with someone in person. So for me, it would be a very special thing. And I'm looking forward for more of those. I'm always, of course, contacting people from all around, but there is always, you know, the audio issues, depending on the internet connection, etc. And in advance, I'm going to apologize for the quality of the audio in this conversation today with Marisa and Bambi. Although I think overall you can listen to it pretty well, but you know, the quality of the audio is not the same as if there was, you know, a person right in front of me. We were just talking, right? Or across or by me, we were just talking. So I'm looking forward for more of those. If you are in the area of Winter Park, Florida, if you are in Orlando, Florida, and you know, psychologists, sociologists, personal trainers, nutritionists, people who work in any area of culture, health, well-being, fitness, physical education, etc., learning and teaching, let them know about me and let them know that I'm interested in converse and having conversations with them here in the podcast. So I'm excited for this new phase of my life here. Podcast wise, I have much more access to things and to interesting people. Whereas, you know, when I was living in Haines City, it was a more of a retired community. Everything was very slow. Everything was very somewhat difficult to have access to. I had to travel longer. Now I have, you know, UCF, University of Central Florida, is 10 minutes away. Full Sail University is 5 minutes away. And I had many other colleges and institutes and universities with, you know, full of interesting people to talk to. So anyways, I want to keep it short in this introduction. As I said in the last episode, I'm practicing shortness in my introductions. So anyways, we're talking about aging, right? And even though we speak about that and we speak about many things related to health, fitness, and functional living, I think we all need to ask ourselves, what is aging? What does it really mean? Is it simply biological? Aging doesn't mean just the passage of time, and that's how our body either you know, goes through a peak and then deteriorates. Is aging something that happens so that we can become better individuals, more integrated in society and internally, you know, with ourselves? Is it, again, just like the wine, we're getting better? Is it just like the whiskey, you know, it just gets to a point of aging in which it's good and it's awesome, but then after that, there's not much change? What is it? And in fact, there is the feature, since they activated that feature of voice messaging here in the Anchor platform. You will have the link of my podcast and my Anchor website here, and you can click leave a voice message, and you can maybe leave me a voice message about what you think aging is and how do you see it. Is it something that you think it's good? If you are from a different country, how is aging seen in that culture where you're from? I mentioned in the podcast, for example, that I'm from Puerto Rico, and for us, aging is not necessarily a bad thing, right? Compared to here in the United States, where mostly aging is seen as being irrelevant in life, right? And people sort of like try to run away from it. Nobody wants to get older. Everything is about being younger, feeling younger. And you can see that in advertisement. You can see that in marketing strategies. You can see that in sales tactics and you know, promotions for gyms and aesthetical products. So leave me a voicemail and let me know what you think about aging is, and then we'll discuss that, those comments in the podcast here. All right. So I'm going to leave you now with a conversation, my conversation with Marisa and Bambi of the Age Proof Project. I hope you enjoy it. But again, more than enjoyment, I hope that this conversation is of use or relevance to you. Talk to you next time. For your time, and the reason I contacted you for this, I do this podcast as part of research for a book that I'm writing on topics of physical education and health and fitness. I'm a physical educator, but more from the side of helping individuals and helping them move better and live better beyond this typical notion of fitness, you know, the six-pack culture type of thing. When I saw your videos for the first time, it was interesting because I saw you doing kind of like visual exercises and balance and things like that. I used to work in physical therapy, and I find these things very interesting, and not many people are doing it, right? I think at least most people that I see in Instagram, everybody's focusing on, well, showing their butt and showing the six pack and showing how many, you know, miraculous transformations they're creating out there, and we're sort of forgetting about the important things of movement, right? The, again, balance and living better and being more in creating mindfulness about movement and physical literacy in general. So I saw those things, and you're always smiling, and I said, wow, they're not showing their butts and they're not showing their boobs. And that's, that's true, and that's cool. Most of the time you see that, right?
Yeah.
And
unfortunately, that's what many people see as fitness these days, right? You see these the lady showing their butt, or the guy with the hoodie, you know, the stereotypical Instagram trainer, right? The hoodie opened up and showing the part of a chest and part of the what I look. So when I saw your videos and I kept watching and observing what you do, I was like, wow, it would be super interesting to talk to you and see where that comes from. Where do you guys come from? What's your philosophy of work? And we'll just go from there. You know, I want to try and do it more of a conversation than an interview. Although I have a few questions, right? But it would be more of a chat than anything else. Sure. So, I don't know. You can introduce yourself and say your names and we'll go from there.
Okay, you go ahead.
Well, my name is Bambi. I have been a movement educator for the past 20 years. And recently, in the past 5 years, I have been studying basically applied neurology, or I guess you want to call it neuroanatomy, right? Yeah. And so now we actually use, that's what we use to help our clients live fuller, richer lives, move better, you know, balance. And so we focus on the system as a whole, and not necessarily like, you know, chest or glutes or, you know, abs.
Cutting the body in parts and working out just one part and getting about the other. Okay. That's cool. Nice. Perfect. That's what I do too.
Yeah. And we both come from a pretty strong movement background. I think I'm Marisa, by the way.
Marisa,
yeah.
Marisa, okay.
Yeah. So we both come from a strong movement background. We are both Pilates instructors for quite a while.
Okay.
Yeah. And we both had learned a good amount of strength training along the way. I think, though, as we got older, we noticed that something was missing from the fitness industry. And something was missing for us as far as the way we wanted to train and the way that we wanted to approach maintaining fitness as we got older. So it's not so much about aesthetics anymore. Though we want to look good, we want to feel good. And we want to feel like we can still accomplish a lot with our bodies being the main tool of kind of seeing our will played out in the world. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to slow down as we get older. We actually want to maintain ability as we get older. And I wasn't finding that in personal training or Pilates. Nothing against either of those mediums.
Right.
But we both started discovering what I call functional neuroanatomy.
Right.
And what a powerful tool that knowledge is. So when you understand the human nervous system, you can actually use that knowledge to create changes much more quickly than I had been able to with myself or with my clients through movement or strength training.
Okay. Well, you mentioned that, I mean, that's funny that you mentioned Pilates and that you weren't finding in Pilates that, you know, change that you're looking for, like, you know, better aging. Because everybody talks about Pilates, about, you know, like it's this another miraculous method that's been here saving people. I guess it's worked. But I guess what you mean is that anyways, what's something missing, right? Some knowledge. And that's part of what I try to find with this podcast and the research that I do and the people that I talk with. What I do, I call it integrated physical education, right? I'm a physical educator because that's what I studied. I went to university for that. And I'm a certified trainer, and I have a few certifications in stress therapy and myofascial release and all that. But I try not to present myself as a personal trainer, because every time I say I'm a personal trainer, people stop me and say, oh, and how much do you think I need to lose? Or how quickly can you get me, you know, like,
yes,
to lose 3 pounds, 30 pounds? Or, hey, I have 3 weeks to be size 10 and they're 20, you know, and that's kind of like the association of that word, of those words of being a trainer.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Mm-hmm. And also I try to, I say I'm a physical educator because I, my approach to my clients is that it's more of an educational approach. I try to focus on helping them with their fundamental movement patterns rather than with the strength and resistance, right? If I do an assessment, my assessment to either of you would be, you know, I want to see how you sit down, how you stand up, and how you walk, and how you pick up something from the ground and put it on a shelf, because those are things that you do every day. Versus give me, you know, 2 minutes of push-ups, and we'll just compare that to the standardized, you know, ACSM or NSCA, whoever it is, the certifying, trending certifying agency. And I use a lot of the things that I learned from teaching at school with my clients too, like the observing, I would say body language and micro expressions and things like that when they are exercising and when we're stretching them, and I see that they winked a little bit, that tells me something. I use those things that I learned from the psychology classes and movement development and things like that to help my clients. Right. And I found, just like you found with what you do, that it at least with the people that give themselves the opportunity to go beyond this, you know, 30-day weight loss mentality, they've become better. I helped, for example, I coach a lady who is 86-year-old that couldn't walk, and she walks, right? And her husband was a stroke patient. He already passed away, right? They're very, very in that age. But he couldn't walk, was always in a wheelchair, and I helped him stand up. But these things took exploration. Instead of me coming here with this, you know, I have the solution for you, I say, wait, I don't know you, right? So let me just see how you move and what you can do, and we'll explore. Do you guys do that? Do you explore? Do you have the solution to each client, or do you sort of like have some wiggle room to play with and learn a little more?
We definitely treat each client individually. We don't have a system that we follow that we try to fit every client into that system and make them do the same thing. We pay a lot of attention to the result that the client wants to achieve by working with us. So sometimes that's asking them, well, you know, show us what you can't do, what do you have difficulty doing? And then we do a lot of assessments that tell us a lot about what's going on with our nervous system. Okay. And if we can identify a couple key issues with our nervous system, address those, and often enough, we see that things improve, whether it be their strength increases or their movement patterns improve. They're much more stable. And there are a lot of ways to enter the nervous system. You just have to watch and take a good history and do quite a bit of a assessment.
Okay.
And just that looks different for everybody.
Yeah. Is there a like a specific approach that you use, a specific system for those type of assessments? Like I use 3D maps for, I don't do neurological type of assessment. I do more like mobility type of things because I haven't learned those yet. But I use 3D maps from Gray Institute. I think it looks pretty functional, you know, like they use lunging patterns and rotation and hip rotation and motions that are similar to daily living activities. Do you use any specific system out there?
Do you want to talk about vestibular and visual assessments that we do?
Yeah, we can do it together.
Okay.
Well, I mean, we actually look at the everyone's nervous system is different, right? Mm-hmm. Every
how they're functioning.
Yeah, and because we are affected by our past, right? So whatever has happened in the past will affect how you move today.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually take a look at how someone's eyes are working, and also we test their inner ears and to check out their balance, right? So everyone's balance is different. Was that the path that you wanted to?
Yeah. So when you talk about general assessments, we always check to see how well someone's balance system
works. And for us, the key organ of the balance system is the vestibular organs of the inner ear. So we ask our client to perform several different drills or assessments just to test how well their the vestibular organs are functioning, or how well they're able to receive the information of movement. So for example, and I know that your audience won't be able to see this, but if you can see me, I'm going to just stare right at the camera and turn my head quickly right and left. And I want to be able to see that my client is able to do that, keeping their eyes fixed on a target as they turn their head quickly right and left. That will tell me a couple things. If they get dizzy or feel disoriented, there's something that's not going right with their canals of their inner ear. They can't stay focused on the target, or if the target gets blurry, that tells me that there's something going on with their vestibular reflexes. You should be able to turn your head or move your head very quickly, keeping your eyes fixed on a target, and that target should remain visually clear. So that, for example, is one assessment. And if they don't do well at that assessment, then we can guess that they're probably going to have some difficulty stabilizing themselves, that their balance will be compromised, and that their visual reflexes will be compromised.
Okay. Do you use, you mentioned that, and I learned those exercises. I mentioned that I used to work in physical therapy. I'm from Puerto Rico, and I had the opportunity there to work with at that moment, the only person that specializes in vestibular therapy in there. And so for a year and a half, that was part of my, it wasn't practice from university, but I just found that job. They accepted me, and I learned as I went. But it was interesting because we did a bunch of those, you know, keeping your eyes fixed, following, targets. They would use, she had sort of like a special platform in which people would stand, and they would just tilt it in different ways, different directions and angles. And that was interesting. But then she would, besides exercising and working with balance exercises and gaze and gait and things like that, she would do head manipulations. I didn't learn about that because that was more clinical stuff, but it has something to do with stabilizing the liquids inside the inner ear and the little cartilage or little bones that you have.
Yeah.
So that there's more flow in the inner ear of the fluids. Do you do that? Do you guys do that?
We don't do a lot of hands-on manual adjusting. It's really all client-driven. We really want them to do as much of the movement as possible.
We do a lot of observation. We observe. We try to observe pretty much everything. We observe our clients' reaction to requests, even, right? Because sometimes if you ask someone to do something, there's hesitation, or if you ask someone to do like a lateral lunge, and if they have to look at their feet before they do a lateral lunge, we take note of that. So we kind of watch everything.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that. I train a guy who's an Air Force recruit. He's younger, 22-year-old. But today we were doing push-ups, right? And he thought about it just to go down and do a push-up. And we're doing push-ups because that's what's required for their test. But I saw him, and he was just thinking about that. Like, how do I kneel down and get into that position? And that I mentioned to him that we should explore his confidence in movement a little more, because it shouldn't take you that much time to just go into the push-up position. And we've been training for a while. I like that you mentioned that you observe things that are not necessarily seen in the typical fitness world. And I try to do that as much as I can. And at least maybe because I've had the opportunity to be, a school teacher and then working at different type of gyms, for like physical therapy or, very high end gyms, and what I call sweatshops, the gym, those old school equipment, and everybody's just sweaty and pumping iron. But I've seen all of those different, and I've learned to sort of like step back a little bit and observe from the outside because of those experiences. So that's interesting.
And that very much goes against just keeping everyone within a system, you know? So when we, for example, if I see someone doing that, I have to ask myself, is there something going on with their eyes? Can they not use their eyes to figure out the distance between themselves and the floor?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a visual skill that could be just their inability to hold their eyes down on a target at the floor. It could be their inability to stabilize themselves while looking down at the floor. That's also another reflex. It could be that they can't, there's a visual skill called accommodation, mm-hmm. where you can determine the distance between yourself, your eye, and the distance to the target that you're looking at. So that's why we spend a lot of time on visual skills, training visual skills, because the body goes where the eyes go. And the, mm-hmm.
I see that on your Instagram. There's a lot of that, and I like that.
And the body will not go where the eyes can't go or are afraid to go.
I found when I got certified as my myofascial release stretcher, I could say, people who were having, for example, forehead posture and rolled shoulders and have a lot of tightness in the back of the neck tend to have blurry vision. And then all of a sudden I just release those and they're like, oh, I can see in HD. I can look better and just move around, and even their balance gets better with that. And I try to explain that sometimes to the trainers that I know, and they're like, oh, how is it possible that vision can improve? And I mean, I cannot take away, you know, myopia or astigmatism or anything like that. But blurry vision sometimes comes from stress and anxiety and tension in the head.
Right.
I wanted to ask, because most of the time you post your videos at a gym, right? There is a weight set and there is treadmills and things like that. Is it your place?
No, we work with a group of trainers and practitioners. A lot of us have been working together, kind of under the umbrella of the same business for almost 20 years.
Okay.
But it's not our business. We
operate our business out of that location. Basically, there are a little over 30 practitioners in that same place, but we are all independent.
Multidisciplinary group. What I mean is a multidisciplinary group.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. So there are Pilates instructors, personal trainers, people that do the functional neuroanatomy work that we do, massage therapists. We have a couple acupuncturists,
right. Chiropractors.
Chiropractors. I do nutrition out of there as well.
Yeah. So it's a holistic care kind of a place.
That's I like that. I try to do that as much as possible. Like when I talk, I'm no nutritionist, right? So when people ask me about diets and things like that, I don't like diets myself. Like if I don't see that there is something that's maybe killing you, you know, like you're eating McDonald's every day or things like that, maybe just with a few simple changes, like adding more water and more vegetables and fruits. If I see that there is a certain condition like high blood pressure, or I think that there is a tendency to diabetes from my past knowledge, and I would just refer you to another, you know, to a dietitian or a nutritionist. And that's another reason why I don't say I'm a trainer, because another thing is that, oh, I'm a personal trainer. Oh, do you have a diet that can help me?
Right.
I'm a physical educator. But the reason I ask about the gym is that it's not, another reason that I found you interesting is that these exercises that you show or portray are not normally done at a gym. You know, there's not really a weight set behind a person who does what you do. So yeah. I'm like, my question would be, what's going to be, how do the people that goes there see those things? Like they see you like, oh, these ladies are crazy and they're just moving and following stuff with their eyes, because I thought, well, it was just a typical gym.
Well, actually, you know, not to get away from from the, you know, the goal of the client by using neurology. We actually use neurology, like neuroanatomy applied, to get people to move better before they actually do their exercise. We don't do it just so that, you know, like they're, you know, like just looking funny for that time, for the whole time, right? We actually use it to solve movement issues so that the nervous system is primed and ready to actually move well. And that's why we do stuff like vision work, so that the result of the movement is actually better. So we're not actually just giving people neural drills. We're actually giving people neural drills to help them move better. To solve
kind of like a preparation stage so that they can move on.
Yeah, we use it to warm up, or we actually use it to help solve movement issues. We're not like solving neurological problems necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, so if you there are a lot of posts on our Instagram page that Bambi really loves to do strength training. She's quite remarkable, actually. She's really very strong. So we've done several posts where by using some of the functional neuroanatomy work, we can actually, we've helped her lift things heavier, go into a deeper range of motion, into different kinds of squats and things like that. I think, what did we do? We were working on your deadlift a couple weeks back.
Yeah.
So working on, Bambi was having some trouble with her deadlift. The reason why someone like us would want our clients to be able to do a deadlift is because, do you have grandkids? Right? Do you want to be able to pick up small children off the floor, properly loading your spine and your hips and your knees, and being able to lift this wriggly loved one off the ground without hurting yourself?
Yeah.
So we definitely want our clients to be able to lift heavy things. So if they're having a difficult time going into that movement or even approaching that position, we want them to be able to get there. So we had, we do some posts like this where we demonstrate that either Bambi or I are having some trouble. And this is, you know, they're pretty honest, I think. We don't mind showing people our imperfections. Where we're having difficulty lifting something or getting ourselves down to the ground, we then apply some neural input. Sometimes we use, that's perhaps when we use like a vision drill. There was the one where I was trying to step up and step down from a very high box.
Right. I saw that one. That was nice.
That was very difficult for me to step down with control. And if you can imagine, a lot of people, as they get older, they'll start avoiding doing things like that. They might stop putting themselves in situations where they may have to step up or step down on something that's kind of feels too high for them. They feel like they don't have the strength or the control. We want people to be able to do that. If I'm having difficulty doing like that in that post, we figured out that maybe holding my eyes in an upward position for about 10 seconds, that really helped me gain the stability and the control of my body for me to be able to do that. And that's another way that we want our clients to be able to be very capable.
I like that. I had the opportunity to work at a place here in Florida where the majority of the population would say were between their 50s and 70-year-old.
Right.
But it was this kind of place where, you know, going back to the weight loss, six fat, you know, I want to see super hot. I want to look super hot in tight jeans, things like that. And I was always arguing with my boss because I'm seeing these people that are having balance issues or are having movement issues or were having shoulder problems or any, I mean, there was a plethora of dysfunction. And I was always proposing, hey, let's do maybe a Saturday class on just movement, right? Help go with fundamental things like developmental movement patterns and things like that. And he was always saying that, no, they're not here for that. They're here for the sweat and the burn.
Mm-hmm.
And when I resigned, I got some of those people that called me, because I was always, after each class, it was a kind of like a group class thing. But after each class, people would approach me and say, hey, how would you, I mean, my shoulder's hurting. What would you do? Or do you have a stretch? So when I resigned, they called me and they were complaining about that, right? But the thing is, some of them mentioned what we've been talking about, right? Most of the time we have those type of programs around. We just have gyms that are just for the sweat and the burn and forget about anything else. And when a physical therapist don't help, because you have to be referred to the physical therapist. It's not that you can just walk into the physical therapy clinic, and they're kind of like in the limbo. So they sort of like say, you know what, let me just go to the sweat and the burn. And maybe if I lose some weight, right, then I may get better.
Cures everything.
Yeah. I was going to mention that, and I was going to ask that, like where you are with the weight loss miracle.
Where are we at with the weight loss miracle?
Yeah, I mean, in the sense that just like you mentioned, you know, it cures everything. I was listening to a podcast the other day, for example, and the host was talking about his neck, and his neck was bothering. And he said, maybe I just need to lose some weight. But I'm thinking, what weight do you have over your neck? You know, I'm like, that doesn't work, right? So, and that's kind of like the mentality of most people and the mentality of the industry in general, right? You have to lose weight if you want to look better. You have to lose weight if you want to breathe better or age better or have a better job or find a loved one. You know, weight loss is kind of like the duct tape of everything in life. Do you promote weight loss as part of your programs? Is it important to you in certain cases, or is this like, well, you know?
I think some of our clients come to us with an interest in losing weight, though that's not our specialty. Though,
yeah.
I mean, okay. We do encourage people to lose weight. I do think there's definitely benefits to be had by being, you know, whatever the idea, I'm putting quotes.
Yeah.
I'm doing air quotes, so your ideal weight. Being overweight is gonna stress the system physiologically, neurologically, mechanically. And if someone is really wanting to lose weight and is challenged in that way, I'll refer them out. Because I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, being, you know, focusing on exercise and movement, it's not the most efficient way to lose weight. That's not to diminish the importance of exercise and fitness and strength, at all. They really need to go hand in hand, but I think dietary changes are going to be the most efficient means of losing weight over exercise. Then exercise is absolutely a great complement to that. And you have, I think you need to exercise to maintain health and fitness and longevity. We're so focused right now on longevity, so we'll definitely promote anything that helps our clients be healthier.
Yeah. I think the weight loss, like, and I want to go back in a few minutes to the longevity thing, but the weight loss thing, for example, I don't even promote it as part of a service, right? I don't say that, at least in my opinion, weight loss is not a specialty, right?
Yeah.
Weight loss could be the result of many things. You could be sick and lose weight, right? Mm-hmm. You could be deeply depressed and that you lose weight due to that. And it is also a secondary effect, a byproduct of movement and better nutrition and better lifestyle in general, right? And there is cases in which when people have better social relationships, then they start losing weight. So it's a result of maybe anxiety or something that you mentioned, going back to the past, maybe something happened in the past, maybe something's holding you back that is not just the mere fact of putting up weight. So I try not not even in my website, I put like, hey, you know, one of the benefits of integrated physical education is weight loss. Because of that, I mentioned weight management because, hey, maybe you are underweight or you are maybe you're heavy, well, you're malnourished and your, you know, bone tissue and fascial tissue and muscle tissue is just low. And then as you start exercising, you gain a little weight, but that doesn't mean you're not healthier, right? So I try to fight with that. I sometimes I joke that I am an anti-weight loss trainer in that sense. I whenever people ask me all the time, like, hey, how much can I lose weight? Or you know, how quickly can you get me to get, you know, in my wedding dress in 3 weeks? That's very, there are so many variables for weight that I cannot say that, oh, there is, I can do that right away. Or that it is a specialty. Again, it could be just a result of some of anything. Aging. How do you define aging?
That's a good question.
That's a good question.
That's a good question. Aging is a process that happens over time. I'll leave it at that. It's a physiological, and for some people, a very psychological process that happens over time. Our bodies change and adapt.
Yeah.
You know, from, you know, even before we're actually born, there's, you know, we're growing, we're changing, if you want to call it aging. I don't want to define it as getting older.
It's right. There is a little social component up to that, right? Like getting older and aging are somewhat different in that in the social aspect. You know, an old person tends to be a person that's irrelevant sometimes, or that can't not do something, versus, you know, maybe you are mature or you're just, you know, aging. You're not the way I see it, and I've seen many people trying to avoid the word old. Right. Or I'm getting older. There is no, I'm just maturing. You know, I'm like the wine. I'm getting better.
And that's possible. I think we're both better than how we
were 10 years ago. Let's see. I've been thinking about this a lot in the past few weeks. I'm actually turning 49. So it's actually been on my mind. Right. I'm like, oh, what hashtags can I think about? Right. I'm thinking 49 is just fine. I don't know. I feel like I'm a little bit ambivalent in terms of like the number, but I also feel that in a lot of ways, I'm actually a lot better. I try, like, so, you know, like we look at these markers, right? These markers in life of like, oh, you know, these numbers have meaning, even though especially no meaning, right? I don't know.
It depends on who you talk to.
I was trying to lift some weights that I did way back when, quote unquote, right? And I'm actually a better mover now than I was back then, and in some ways I'm actually stronger in that I want to be stronger, and I am.
Okay.
That I want to be better at, I'm better at. So I don't know if getting older is a thing that we should accept in terms of like our limitations,
right?
People's expectations of themselves and of others. I feel like what you expect of yourself matters. So the words that you use, the things that you think to yourself matters.
Okay.
If you can't do something, you're right. And if you think you can, you're also right.
Okay. Yeah. So a lot of people, we come up against this a lot, that a lot of our clients say, well, you know, my knee's bothering me, but you know, that's going to happen. I'm 60, you know, arthritis. I don't know how many times I have to say to my clients, like, no,
right.
That's nothing to do with aging, and then
right. That's not true. You know, your knee doesn't have to keep getting worse as you turn 60, 61, 62. Your knee can actually get better. So I think there's you can go online and take this
test, the survey, and it'll tell you what like your physiological age is based on like what your, how actually like how many birthdays you've had, like how like old, I'm getting air quotes, old is your body. And I'm kind of curious, I have thought a couple times to create some kind of survey or list of assessments that might help someone figure out their neurological age. How well is their entire nervous system functioning?
Yeah.
And that would be based on how capable are you?
Right.
You know, can you still do the things that you want to do? And I got this wonderful idea from Peter Attia. I listened to his podcast quite a bit, and he came up with this idea called the Centenarian Olympics. What if you were lucky enough to live to be 100, what would you have to be able to do to make being still alive worth it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've been asking my clients that lately. So like, really think about it. Like what, and a lot of them say the same thing. I want to be able to travel, like do meaningful travel, not just sit on a bus, but get out
right.
there and walk and hike and, you know,
yes.
get to those remote places that people don't get to see. To be able to lift my grandkids, to be able to not have to move out of my house because
right.
I can't go up the stairs anymore.
Right. Exactly.
To be able to get to my attic, to be able to get down from my attic, to get under the crawl space, like to be independent
yeah.
and capable.
Yeah.
And so how do you train for that? And that's what we're trying to work right now.
It's funny that you mentioned that. I was consulting a gentleman, I think he was on his 70s, somewhere there, and he mentioned that he went to Europe with his wife, and they spent most of the time in a bus or in a bench or, you know, like sleeping in the hotel because their knees were bothering. And well, they were asking about what I do, and I said, well, one of the things that I would like to do is to help you go again to Europe and not take the bus, right? You go to Europe and vacations to walk, to visit a cathedral or something like that. You're not going to stay in a hotel or be in a bus all day, someone telling you, hey, well, this is here and that's there. So that's, I think when it comes, and he mentioned that, well, maybe just, you know, we're getting old. And I'm like, well, but I've met older people that move better, that even move better than me, right? So I did Tai Chi for a while. And I remember that my Sifu, I mean, he was about 80 years old and he moved better than me. And at that time, I was a brown belt karate practitioner. So I thought I was immortal and I moved better than anybody else. And I saw this old guy. And one day we get to talk and I say, hey, I want you to teach me like combat Tai Chi, like Wing Chun, something like that. And he's like, all right, perfect. Just throw me a few punches. And if you touch me, I'll teach you. And, I mean, here's this 20-something year old, you know, young man against this 80-something year old guy, and I couldn't touch him, and he was just flowing like water, and it was like, I was in my mind, you know, like, what the fuck is happening? You know, I know karate, you're an old man, I'm supposed to be able to punch you, but he mentioned that the importance of movement comes before the importance of technique or the importance of being stronger or being able to just jump in the air and throw three kicks, right? If it's not relevant for what you want to do or what you have to do in life, then it's not, doesn't matter.
Right.
And he said, well, I don't have to come off the ground to throw you on the floor, but I just move in a certain way and I just push you. I don't need to be an elephant to be able to push you.
Right.
It was very interesting. But I guess with the aging thing, at least here in the U.S., I've experienced not plenty of, you know, international travel, but I've met people from all over the world. And there is a lot of, I don't want to get older. You know, I don't want to age. I don't want to grow up. I want to always be in my 20s or in my 30s. And I get that question a lot, not question or comments, a lot of, hey, I want to feel like when I was younger. And I always go back to that Sifu. I go back to my father. I mean, he's in his 70s and he goes snorkeling or diving there in Puerto Rico. And he spends 5 minutes without a tank underwater. So I want to be like that when I grow up, you know? So I do want to grow older in that functional way. Why do you think that happens? Like, why are we so afraid of getting older?
I think it's just the expectation of losing function and losing control and losing cognitive abilities. I think there is just that expectation for a lot of people, most people that we come across, that there is this decline as we age, and people don't want to decline. They don't want to become, I think it's just people just don't want to become incapable, and people don't want to suffer, and that losing your abilities creates a lot of mental and emotional suffering.
I think there's also the social part. I think this place I used to work here in Florida, it was this guy, he was, you know, in his 55, something like that. And he would, like, I met him when I started working at that place, and he had this, you know, a traditional car, you know, serious man. And as he turned older, he changed, you know, he started wearing hats and glasses, and he bought a Jeep, and he was, you know, listening to rock and roll very loud. And I'm like, wow, you know, he you don't want to get old, right? And I didn't mean it. I asked him, and I didn't mean it in a way that becoming irrelevant or decrepit or anything like that. It's just, you don't want to grow up, right? And I think, in my opinion, getting older is that growing up, being wiser, being like the wine, you know, being better in a sense. And many people are afraid of that thing. In my experience, I used to work for the company Life Fitness, the fitness equipment company. And I did quite some travel throughout the US and the Caribbean. And we've had conventions, you know, international conventions, and you get to meet the people from, like, the branch from LA and the branch from New York and the people from Japan and the people from New Zealand. And every one of them, I've always been very curious about culture. And that's one of the things I explore in the podcast too. When it comes to, I said, how well-being is influenced depending on cultures. And they didn't, at least Brazilians, New Zealanders, Japanese people, the French that I got to meet, they didn't care about getting older, you know, because being older was sort of like this rite of passage, you know, me becoming a better person, becoming wiser. And the people from here, you know, they were wearing like, younger type of clothes, you know, they wanted to look like, you know, I can still party hard. And they are in their 70s, where they're wearing the Oakleys. And we went hanging out in LA one day. And, you know, everybody was just wearing normal, like jeans and a polo shirt. And most of the American branch, the companies here in the US, but most of the American people that were there, they were wearing shorts and sandals. And I'm like, huh. Yeah. We're going to high-end restaurants and you're coming in this way. I mean, I guess there shouldn't be a dress code for that, but you can sort of see it in their actions, the way they speak. They were always saying, hey, dude, things like that, as, you know, like a younger person would speak.
I don't know. I kind of, go ahead.
I think that, I do think that culture has a lot to do with how we handle age. And I do know that because I grew up in Vietnam, where as an elder, you know, there's a lot of respect that's inherent to aging and as an older person. And maybe, you know, like you said, in America, where as sometimes people get older and they start to dress like they're in the boy band. I think the other thing is that there is a component of older people tend to feel invisible in our culture, in American culture, I think. And there's there's fear of that. You have to become irrelevant, like you mentioned before. Yeah.
That's nice. I find it curious. Where I used to live here, I just moved a couple of days ago, but where I used to live, which is about an hour away, there's a kind of like a retired community, retired town. And they started putting these billboards of how these people, kind of like retired homes and with pools and gyms, but they didn't have younger people in the billboard. They had younger people, but there were images of people from the 50s and 40s, you know, how women would wear a bathing suit in those times versus, you know, what is used today. And I mentioned to my wife, well, this is interesting, the marketing and how they're using how these people would look and how they would feel at that time to capture their attention, because they want to come back to that.
Clever.
Yeah, it's crazy. I did an MBA, a combined MBA in international marketing and business management. And more than, I mean, you get a lot of knowledge, but I came out a little scared of marketing tactics and advertising. And I mean, we created fake products, but the strategies were real, right? In which we would find different ways to convince you, no matter what, to buy what I'm selling you.
Right.
Regardless of how you feel. And I see that, in fitness, it happens. And in my experience working with a fitness equipment company, I mean, having the latest treadmill is what's going to get you better. Your business is going to be better. Or if you as an individual will last longer, you'll age better. Can you imagine people going to your home and seeing this treadmill? This is kind of like the Bentley of treadmills. And I mean, you use them to sell because I had to sell. But at the same time, every time I came home, I was like, holy crap, what am I doing? You know, I'm literally lying to these people.
Right.
And just selling them a dream.
Yeah, you're selling a dream.
Yeah, and that's how I see the fitness industry is going. And that's why when I saw you, I'm like, wow, it will be super interesting to talk to them just because of that. Because what you do, you're not selling a dream, right? You're not telling people, come here and in 30 days, I'm going to get you. 30 days guaranteed, I'm going to get you here or there, which is amazing. So great job. Good job.
Thanks. I do want to say something too about just, you know, people who live or grew up in different places. There, you know, especially what I've observed from, you know, the different European cities I've traveled to, they're a lot more active. Play is a part of their lives from the time they're small children to when they're adults. Men are still meeting up to play sports, right? Soccer, as we would call it, you know, football, right? And they go out, they hike, they climb. They spend a lot of time with their families, being very active. And I'm not seeing that here. That's not a prevalent way to live here in the States. And those activities give the nervous system an enormous amount of high quality and very much needed input. Right? So if you're changing, you're running around, you're accelerating, you're decelerating, you're changing positions, you're stressing your joints in different positions, you're providing your nervous system and your body with all this input that it has to respond to and adapt to. And their bodies stay fit, capable, and strong. But I see here that a lot of people, as they mature, as they get older, or however you want to say, they get jobs, they spend a lot of the time sitting down, they watch a lot of television. Mm-hmm. They're not spending much time with those activities that would give their bodies the input that they need to be able to meaningful ways continue to respond to the world and to be able to stay active. And you know, it's not like the Europeans are meaning to do this. It's just it comes with the territory.
Right. And mentally it keeps them agile too, because it's in real time and it's attentional. You know, when you're playing a game, you really have to pay attention. You have to not just exert physically, but you mentally are engaged. And
I see that it happens a lot in the Caribbean too, like in Puerto Rico. Like as people age, they still, you know, like they party, but they wouldn't party the same way, you know, as we were like 20s or something. but they will be, there's a lot of dancing. There's a lot of like playing dominoes. They would go and, you know, get together with the family. Oh, let's go to the farm and get this and that. And there's a lot of physical activity that is much more intuitive. And that's something I've been thinking about and exploring too, like intuitive movement versus this very structured way that you have to do things. And how it affects well-being in general. So it happens a lot there. But anyways, we're about to hit an hour and I don't want to take much of your time.
Oh, no, fine. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time. Who are you next? So you're Bemi and you were Narisha.
Marisa.
Marisa.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, it's easy. If I say it in Spanish, Marisa will be
Marisa, better. Yes.
That's good.
That's
yeah.
It.
Yeah. So thank you for your time. Keep doing your good job and we'll stay in contact. Hopefully we can do this later on. I'll keep doing some more research and if I come across with a few questions or comments or things to share with you, I'll share it. I'll be putting, if you can mention real quick where people can follow you and find you on social media so that I'll put the links anyway, but if you mention it, then it will be here too and they'll listen to it.
Sure, we're on Instagram and we're called Age Proof Project.
Okay, and that's the only one you use, Instagram?
Right now.
Currently.
Currently.
Okay. Don't use Facebook. That's all right. Instagram's better for that. All right. So anyways, have a great night. I don't know what time is there. Maybe it's like 5 something there in California.
It's almost six. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So anyways, thank you for your time. Have a good night.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Have a good day.
Bye-bye. Bye.